Hello and welcome to the Sustainable Life Podcast. My name is Em and I'm the host of this podcast and the founder of the Sustainable Life app, an app for sustainable living made easy. The Sustainable Life app connects you with sustainable brands and businesses worldwide. And the purpose of this podcast is to interview various experts in the world about topics relating to sustainability. Our podcast's objective is to help keep you informed, encouraged, and inspired. So today, I'm going into the vault and sharing with you an amazing component of our app, the complimentary video interviews with the CEOs and founders of the sustainable brands featured and verified by our app. My background is as a journalist and TV producer-director, so I personally interview all of these amazing founders and CEOs. Where can you find these interviews? It's simple. When using the app, click on the online shopping button. The online shopping section is reserved for sustainable brands who sell their products online. Once you've clicked on what you're looking to shop for, whether it's women's apparel, children's toys, men's shoes, maybe some skincare or beauty products or home decor, etc., then you'll get a list of companies who we have verified just for you within that section. These interviews that you can find on these individual profile pages of these brands are phenomenal because not only can you learn about the company and the person behind it, but these founders are also experts in their respective fields. So for example, I learned a lot about antimony through Stephanie Osler, the CEO and founder of Devil May Wear. Antimony is a chemical found in clothing, and Stephanie shares how her developing the allergy led to her creating her sustainable brand. Her brand sells sustainably made women's apparel, and she's very famous for pocket panties. And they also sell sustainably sourced and made jewelry. So full disclosure, when I recorded this CEO founder interview, it was back when our platform was called Shop with Em, because I'm Em and it was for shopping. But we've since rebranded. So just in case you hear Shop with Em mentioned at all, you know that we're referring to the Sustainable Life app. So without further ado, let's get started. Today we have Stephanie Osler from Devil May Wear. How are you, Steph?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Good, good. So we're so excited to talk to you because you're like one of the pioneering brands on Shop With Em.
Yay!
And full disclosure, we're like really good friends.
Totally.
So when I was starting this, I was like, how do you feel about this? And you were kind of like my crash test dummy.
I was your crash
not
test
a dummy. You were my expert.
A tech unsavvy person using your app, telling you how somebody not tech savvy will use an app.
It was awesome. The website too, and the
application too.
Yeah, that was amazing. So do you want to start off by just like telling everybody like who you are? Because you're the CEO and founder of Devil May Wear, and your brand has been here for forever. Like I remember being a teenager reading about you.
Yeah. I'm Stephanie Osler. I am the designer and creator of Devil May Wear, and we've been around forever. I first started using the company name in 2003, so that's like our launch date. But I actually started this company when I was 12.
I remember reading about you in the youth, the little youth magazines that we used to have. What were they called?
That's
it was called Real West or something. It was like this youth newspaper that went around to all the high schools.
That's hilarious.
You did like fashion shows or something or the other, and you were in those magazines
awesome.
As like a feature. Yeah, I remember reading about you.
Yeah, I started when I was 12. I wanted to buy musical instruments, and I was too young to get a job. So I convinced my dad to give me a $200 loan for a button press, and I started making buttons for bands. And then a couple years of selling buttons, I got a silk screen and we started making silk screen patches and silk screen shirts. I ran all ages shows. I sold my merch at shows. I made more money than I would have made if I'd gotten a job. And then I did a dressmaking apprenticeship in high school trying to get my post-secondary paid for. So I was just a little bit short on enough hours because I had to have paid hours for the dressmaking apprenticeship. And unfortunately, most clothing designers work 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. And I was a full-time high school student. So it was pretty tricky. I'd skip school to go to work. And so I didn't get enough hours to get my post-secondary paid for. But when I graduated, I just kept on going full-time and I just started selling in stores. And I think that it's so, there's something to be said for getting into something when you don't know what you're getting into. I think if I understood filing corporate taxes, doing payroll, liability, POS systems, how much I was going to have to deal with computers, although I don't want to, I would have never, ever, ever launched a business. And I think that that's one of the things that holds us back in doing the things we want to do as we get older. We start knowing too much, like writing a book or changing a career or moving to a new city, which are so easy to do when you're young and fresh and you don't know what you're doing. But I'm really, really glad I did. And now knowing what I know, I spent a lot of time trying to educate young people on entrepreneurialism, because I think that the entrepreneurial mindset is extremely useful and important later on in life. And so whether or not you actually run your own business or work for somebody else, just developing that mindset young when we don't have all these overwhelming concerns or fears around what we're doing is really important.
Yeah. Well, your brand does like a lot of like ethically made clothing. You source things that are like,
totally.
The fabrics are environmentally friendly. And then you also keep in mind like human rights, animal rights the best you can.
Yep.
And you're really knowledgeable about the general market and like fabric scraps and those kind of things. So can you talk about how you got into that?
Absolutely. So when I was in high school and I was starting to get into this dressmaking apprenticeship idea, and it was sort of like, I didn't realize that this is what I was going to do. I became really concerned with the unethical aspect of fashion, and that really conflicted me, that I had this desire to work in this field, but it was so bad. And so I came up with these ideas. I wanted to have my own factory in Africa where we build a school, and you know, all those pie in the sky ideas when you're a kid, right?
Totally.
But when I got out of school, I was mostly hand sewing things myself at first, and I would take on a lot of commission jobs, just trying to make enough money to pay for my own fabric. And I became allergic to a lot of the fabric I was using through a lot of these commission jobs, especially because I was using a lot of upholstery fabrics that are full of fire retardants and bad chemicals.
Yes.
And I would get these red dots all over my arms, which now I know is an antimony allergy. And I've had my levels tested. I'm very high in antimony, which is very common in fashion, in textiles. And it's a carcinogen, and it's used to make synthetics like polyester soft and spinnable so they can turn it into fabric.
Yes.
One of the problems with antimony is it leaches out of the fabric, it off-gasses, but especially when you sweat. So the worst time that you can wear synthetics is when you work out, and that's where most people are wearing their synthetics. And people have all sorts of excuses about water wicking and stuff, but the trade-off is that you're adding more carcinogens to your body, and we all have different abilities to absorb and release toxic chemicals from our bodies. So you don't know, it's like a ticking time bomb as you continue to bring more of these chemicals into your environment. So lucky for me, this whole idea of eco-friendly fabrics had just sort of hit the market, and it was perfect timing because I was worried that I'd lose my company if I couldn't work with fabric anymore. And I was also concerned, like, what are my customers wearing? Like, I won't be able to wear clothing I even buy from the store, let alone make myself. Like, I need something that is not going to cause me to break out in hives or have red dots all over my skin or who knows what else.
Yeah, you could have gotten so much worse.
Oh, and so many people do. And those are the customers I meet. But then we got into the bamboo and the organic and the natural fibers. So that became a huge pursuit of mine. And then we started having all of our fabric milled in Canada on the East Coast. And they were doing all the bamboo, the organic, the natural fibers, which was great. But they shut down in 2008.
Yeah.
So now our fabric's coming from overseas, which is not the way I want it. And one of the reasons for that is because I have this insanely high ethical compass, and I really believe that when it comes to sustainability, it's not actually sustainable if it's not local. Like, that's just That's just the way it is. So you can make something organic from anywhere you want in the world, but you're just burning more fossil fuels to move it around. You're putting way more labor into it. Honestly, you're putting more money into it, because every time something is put into a process, it costs more money. So
I love that you say that too, because that's like so integral to my platform, is like, companies, come aboard, be transparent, and talk about what you're not doing perfectly and why you can't do it perfectly. And you're just like the perfect example of that.
Oh, and so I try so hard to do things so perfectly, and it is not a good business model in the sense of making a lot of money.
But you're getting there for sure.
But it's just the only thing that is worth doing to me. Like, I think that if there are no options for people, then they can't make good decisions. So my number one priority is local. I think that I try to make things as local as possible. And it pains me to say that where we are right now is I've noticed that my ability to make things local has been backsliding, because things outside of my control, like mills shutting down. And I'm not a fabric mill, I'm not a textile mill, but I'm also a teacher at SFU right now, and we're working on fashion sustainability and fiber shed. And one of the things that we're really interested in is bringing this sort of, like, you know, we've got pasture to plate and food, we'll have like pasture to rack, having things local again, and carbon sequestration through grazing animals, and then using that fiber produced by those grazing animals, like sheep, to create garments locally. And it's sort of carbon sequestration, making a quality product. Wool is brilliant in our part of the world on the West Coast. It's everything in one. So as far as my company goes, we're still making 95% of our products locally, but we are starting to get our fabrics from overseas. We carry a couple products in the stores that come from overseas, you know, those little kind of things. But as that's actually been going as far from local as I could ever possibly imagine, on the other hand, with the education aspect and what we're doing behind the scenes, we're bringing it more local than it's probably ever been.
That's beautiful.
So hopefully we...
Oh, I think I lost you.
Sure, because...
You've never had that happen?
Skype cut?
Yeah.
No, I don't think I actually have, though. I don't use Skype too much.
Okay, well, that's... Okay. Like, I've had it happen a couple times now, but we're back with Stephanie.
Yay!
We got cut off. And you were saying that, like, you have more local in your store now than ever before, which is beautiful.
Well, no, I was saying the opposite, that, where we used to actually have all of our fabric milled in Canada, everything was very, very local. It was all sourced locally, coming locally, then produced locally, sold locally. Because of things out of our control, like mills shutting down, we now are getting the fabric from overseas, and, you know, things that, like, it's been slowly, incrementally moving further away from me, and that's been completely out of my control. But what I'm doing behind the scenes is I'm teaching at SFU and working on fiber shed projects, where we're talking about creating more textiles locally through carbon sequestration, through grazing animals, and using the fiber from the grazing animals to produce fiber, and then we can mill it and then put that in a product and actually have something even more local than we've ever had before. So it's kind of like, as my world as a clothing company has slowly been shifting away from my base, which is something that's really disturbing to me and largely out of my control. On the other hand, I'm working behind the scenes to sort of bring those two back together.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. And your teaching at SFU is just so beautiful too, because you're teaching
really
the next
cool.
generation of everything that you've learned.
It's amazing. And it's not even that I'm teaching what I've learned, because the course is very much an exploration in these concepts. And one of my favorite things, and I notice with people in every sort of circumstance where I've taught these things, or anywhere where I go to do a talk, the beginning of the conversation, people are often like, well, tell me the answer. What's the answer? I need the answer now. You have to tell me the answer. And then we have to tell everybody, as if there's one answer that somebody's come up with that for some reason nobody's doing. And I get a lot of intense energy from that. Like, if I don't provide the answer, within a few minutes, I'm going to lose them. And they're not, if, you know, if I don't have the answer, they don't want to hear from me. And as soon as we
get
start talking,
get to the point.
Yeah, tell me and what the answer like, is. I need the answer.
Which makes sense on some level. And it's just because of the instant gratification lifestyle that like social media has brought into the world.
I also think that
I feel
if you're not well versed in this concept, it can seem very black and white. Like it just seems obvious. And the other thing that most people come into it with is, what should I buy? Like, I need to buy something to be better. Everything's about buying something. And it's not. Even the most sustainable, ethical product is going to become garbage one day. Like, it's not about just buying more things. When you do need to buy something, which eventually we're all going to do, the idea is to buy something better than any of the alternatives out there. But if you don't need anything, the answer is not to buy.
If you don't need anything, but yeah, if you need something, find something that supports a circular economy that you can one day ultimately compost.
But the answer is when I go stand in front of a class or I go to a talk and I get, well, what should I buy? The answer is not going to be to buy. Like, that's not what this conversation is about. And so when we start unpacking this and how complex the problem is, and you know, like, you can't just use natural dyes. This is one of the concepts that people are really into. Like, let's just switch to natural dyes. Everything should be just
dyed. Natural dyes.
They're great, but you know what? We don't actually have enough agriculture in the world to 100% use natural dyes. We would strip the planet. We actually can't use 100% natural dyes. We can't.
Yeah, but like, if you mix natural dyes with recycling what you already have and upcycling what you already have, I think there could be a happy medium.
With the amount of production we have today, you would strip the planet of all of its agriculture if you used 100% natural dyes.
Yeah, 100%. But if you balance it with other things, you're set, in my opinion. Right?
But this is my point, is people expect one answer. They think, well, natural dyes. We'll just use natural dyes. Everything has to be natural dyes. It's not an answer.
For new things that you're producing, it's a really good option.
I would actually argue that there's a lot more gray area to natural dyes than that. Does not mean it's better for the environment or your body.
If you're allergic to those natural elements, but
there's a lot of natural dyes that are not good for people.
Yeah, like if you use a pit from like a what's it called, an apricot, because that's a carcinogen, I get that, but you just have to do your research. And a lot of that comes down to the people who are doing the dyeing.
The point is that you can't go to a class, you can't go to a talk, you can't go out there and just say everything needs to be natural dye that fixes everything. You need to do your research. You need to understand the gray areas.
And the people in the industry need to know what they're doing. So they have to have that experience that clearly someone like you has too. Before they produce a product.
My fireplace just shut off, which is kind of weird. That's never happened. So I'm just going to go turn it off in case I have a gas leak. I'll be right back.
Sounds good. Let's all stand by for Stephanie.
All right. Sorry.
Is it a gas fireplace?
Yeah. I got a gas fireplace in my apartment. It's really nice.
Nice. Mine, I have gas fireplaces too, but they just don't work.
Oh,
we turned them all off because of like a mice infestation like years ago, like 10 years ago.
Wow.
There's a huge reason why I have a mouse phobia, and it's probably to do with our fireplaces. And my dad, because like this property is owned by my parents, he literally closed off every single entrance. And then we just like closed off everything that we could just so that they would stop coming in. So I can't use it.
Yeah, that's absolutely what they do. Especially if you've had construction.
So yeah, going back to natural.
Yeah.
So like, so long as the people who are producing these natural dyes have that experience and are doing that full research, consumers should ultimately be fine, but you have to be able to trust who's producing your clothes, right?
The thing is, there's so much more gray area to everything. Nice. And there's often trade-off that happens in any of these decisions we make. And this is why just buying something's not always the answer. At the end of the day, we're ultimately going to be buying things. So telling people not to buy things is also not the answer.
Totally.
I really appreciate certification. I think that certification is coming a long way. And so having information well organized so we can choose what we're trading off, I think is paramount. Because my point being, when we're talking in the context of education, that we're talking in context of expanding on these concepts and it not being black and white, and there not just being one answer to everything, and it's not just natural dye over everything else, or it's not just local over everything else. Like, sometimes local is also not the answer. I think that for individuals, we kind of have to pick priorities, because you just can't know everything either. And one of the problems that I learned through having a store is when you overwhelm people with information, they actually shut down. And in order to self-soothe, they will buy conventionally rather than buy something good. And I thought all the time. So I also don't want that this whole, like, our natural dye is the way to go, to be the thing that overwhelms people. I would absolutely rather somebody, when they're faced with, I don't have all the information, what should I buy? I prefer that they buy local, that they buy organic, that they buy natural. All these things are going to be, if you're hazarding on a side of caution. So you're way more likely to be making the right decision when you're doing, when you're following these steps. So certification is really good, because you're sort of relying on an authoritative body to have been doing that research for you. 100%. And you're hoping that they know what they're talking about. And I think that there's good things for that. But I can say that certification doesn't always have the answer either, as I worked with a company that I will not name fairly recently in the past, that wanted to make everything overseas because they were persistent about getting a fair trade certification. And my first week on the job, I basically canceled all of their overseas production. I found them new suppliers locally. I had everything manufacturing locally. They were going to save about 80% of the production costs. Like, it was enormous. They hadn't gotten anything out the door in years as they were trying to make these products work, because the math just wasn't working. Their volume was not big enough to be manufacturing in China. But what they didn't like about this local manufacturing was they couldn't get a fair trade certification for it. And they were persistent that they had to have a fair trade certification. There's no fair trade certification when there's no trade happening. So if you're doing something within the country, you're selling within the country of origin, there's no fair trade that goes along with that. I think totally. Hypothetically, you could fair trade the United States.
You got the fabric.
You could probably get a fair trade on the fabric because it's coming from overseas, but you can't certify the labor's fair trade on the manufacturing of the garment.
Yeah.
The certification just doesn't work like that.
You couldn't call the brand certified, but you could say that the things that they were using, like the ingredients they use, were.
So, but you can actually, you can't put the official certified fair trade logo on the garment.
You can't, no. You can't. But you can mention it.
But no, but that's what they wanted. They wanted the official fair trade logo on the garment.
That's true, yeah.
So since I left, they've started producing overseas, I've noticed, because they want the fair trade certification.
I didn't know they were. Oh, I know the brand, by the way.
So.
We're hilarious. We're gal pals.
We know too much.
If anybody forgot.
So, I mean, this is a gray area people talk about a lot. Like, are we taking jobs away from people who need them if we're producing things locally? Like, not to say that everything needs to be local, local's always better, on and on and on, but it's also not to say that every certification is a justification for a better product either. Like, I think part of my point in educating people is you need to be aware of the decisions you make. You need to educate yourself as much as possible and take an interest. But what I really try to sell people on more than anything is research what you want. Like, research who you are, get to know yourself. Because I think a lot of the reason we're overbuying products is because we actually don't know who we are and what we want.
And I think this is why we're like such good friends, is because I say this on the platform too, is it's about sustainable consumption.
Yes,
so look for
absolutely.
Sustainable options and only shop what you value.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be a vegan. You don't have to be this, you don't have to be that to be sustainable. Just focus on what you value and then look for options and slowly do better every single day, every single week. And it's going to have a positive ripple effect.
And become familiar with who you are as a person too. Like, don't let advertising take advantage of your low self-worth. At the minute that you start questioning who you are, or what you want, or you want, as soon as you try to impress somebody else is when you hit a moment of weakness and you buy something you don't need.
Oh, that's, you know, so interesting.
So I came to this conclusion years ago, and it's something I talk about in my TED talk, though I should have emphasized it more, that I think one of the biggest problems to overconsumption is our low self-worth. I think that everything is a reflection of our inner world. So you do to the world what you do to yourself. If you're overconsuming, if you're buying garbage, if you're wearing plastic, if you're buying things and then not wearing them at all and letting them go to waste in your closet, or whatever you're doing, it's actually a reflection of yourself. So
that's so fascinating, because I always wonder about cosmetics and people who wear so much makeup and they know it's toxic. It's all chemical, a lot of it. And speaking of branding, a lot of them talk about like vegan, and they'll talk about like cruelty-free, but they don't talk about non-toxic or anything like that. And people still like layer their faces with it. And I always wonder like why, but that makes so much sense.
Well, and I'm also totally fine if that's what you choose to do, if that's the way you choose your self-expression, but to really own it and be like, there's a difference between, I want to look like this because I want to be accepted, I want people to like me, or even more so than this, I want people to like me, is I don't know who I am. That's one that I think is really important. Like, how often do we sit down and actually ask who are we? Why do we do the things we do? Why do we have the preferences we have? Yeah. Like, where did I get the preference for black licorice? We're not born with taste. But, you know, you can go to Japan and people love natto, which is fermented soybeans, and they're very healthy for you. And I've tried to get into it because I'm a health fanatic, and and they're really stringy. Like when you pull them apart, they just have these little spider strings that, have you ever had natto?
No.
Oh, we'll take you out for natto sometime. You're not going to like it if you didn't grow up with it.
Oh, okay.
And you know, people who didn't grow up with black licorice don't like black licorice. My dad made Haggis for Robbie Burns Day every year when I was a kid. I love Haggis, but give Haggis to somebody who didn't grow up with Haggis. They'll find it disgusting. So my point being, like, but even with our food preferences, do we actually question who we are and why we have these preferences? So to really go into the spirituality of who we are, what we're here for, what we want. And when you start to develop your personality and understand who you are and what you value, you're honestly automatically going to buy less.
Totally.
You'll spend just as much money because you'll start buying better quality, because you won't put garbage on your body. And if you wear a pile of makeup, you'll spend so much money on makeup, but it's only going to be the best. Because once you start loving yourself, once you're familiar with who you are and what you want, you can create priorities around that and you can allocate your money appropriately. So then
I find it so fascinating. Like a lot of my friends are now having kids and I've noticed that when the kids come into their life, they'll start to feed them better and then also start to feed themselves things that are better because, you know, they're breastfeeding or whatever. Yeah. And then they learn about the cosmetics and the skincare that they're using. And it's like, just learning what you should and shouldn't be putting on a baby. And then they're like, I wonder if I should be putting that on myself.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't. It's so fascinating how kids change that perspective for a lot of people too.
I get so many new customers who are new parents, especially new moms, because we're mostly for women, but not exclusively, who come in and they go, oh my God, I just had a baby and I realized the future matters. And like, they never thought about it before. And now they're my customers. So we're not like a specifically like mom store, or we're not a not mom store. Like it's not either, but it seems like there's a demographic that leans towards that. But then I noticed something else. Around the kid being about 4 or 5 years old, they suddenly don't care anymore. They go back to normal. Whatever their normal is, they go back to normal.
Don't tell me that. I don't have any friends yet that have kids that old. Okay, I'll observe it.
Honestly, you can't blame anybody. I think that life gets big, especially when you have a little being that's now going to soccer practice and doing homework, and life gets really, really big. And this is why it's so important to decide who we are, get to know who we are, become familiar with ourselves, because these standards will take us through life subconsciously. So like, I won't walk into a McDonald's and eat McDonald's. Like, I just get shivers when I go near McDonald's. Like, it's never going to happen. So I don't have to consciously think, I don't eat McDonald's, I don't eat McDonald's. Like, it just doesn't, it's not part of my persona. It's not who I am. So even if I had a kid, yay.
I'm at like 20 years now that I haven't. Or no, almost 20.
Oh God, I can't remember. Actually, Yeah, it's probably about 20 years.
Oh my gosh. This is why we're such good friends. I love this.
but it becomes part of who you are. So like, if plastic free lifestyle is something you really value as a person, like your plastic, that's what you are, is plastic free, and you become that, it just is who you are. It becomes second nature, and it's not something you have to think about. It's not something that you're constantly planning for every day. You're not waking up for it. You know, your kids grow up and go to school, and you're not just like, oh, what did I think of plastic again? Like, you don't ask that question. You know who you are. But this is what I wanted to say, was also, this is why a platform like your platform is extremely valuable as we go through this process, because we live in the world where we have jobs and lives and children and partners and friendships and families and things we have to do. And as we get to know who we are and what our preferences are and what we value and what we're going to put out there in the world, having a platform that can streamline the education process makes it a lot easier for you to integrate these things and not compromise.
Totally. And looking for those options too in all these different categories. So obviously there's the website where we get to learn about brands like yours, which is phenomenal, but then also the app where we can visit stores like yours.
And the other thing,
brands.
If you're in this phase of who am I, and I honestly think that it's an ongoing exploration. You never arrive at a destination of knowing who you are, but the more clarity you have there, the more things will come together. But as you're going through that journey, you can log on to the app and then see what the options are, because you may not know that that carbon sequestration through grazing sheep locally is a thing that that counteracts greenhouse gas. And then you discover that and you realize that you have a big value in being carbon neutral. And then by buying local wool, you're being carbon neutral, and you realize that here's the thing you didn't know about that you can bring into your life and really take pleasure in. So I think that it goes both ways. It's the beginning and the end. It's where you start to explore who you could possibly be. And then it's where you go to when you've figured out what those qualifications are.
That's really beautiful. Thanks for that. But let's talk about your brand. So one thing I have to say is, like, we've learned about how you got started and all that jazz. Oh yeah, you're based in Vancouver, BC, and you have a shop. So what I love about your shop and my favorite product is your pocket underwear. And I think we have to talk about the pocket underwear, because you and I had this discussion, I think everybody should hear it, is Stephanie was telling me a little while ago that you were struggling with producing clothes because you feel like the world has enough. And you're like, if I'm going to keep this store, I might as well produce something that people should actually buy and do actually need.
New.
So can you talk about that? What is this new thing that we should probably invest
in? So you remember my rant that I actually do quite frequently, but I didn't realize how impactful it was until you you commented on it after my last talk at SFU, that I've never had a customer who needs new pants. Like, I've never met a person in my entire career who needs a new pair of pants. Like, we all have a lot of pants. You don't need a new pair of pants. You want a new pair of pants. You don't
Sometimes
need a new pair of pants.
I need a new pair of pants.
No, you don't. The world is over effing run with pants. There are too many pants, not enough people to wear the pants. There's pants everywhere. You may be out of pants that you want to put on your body, but you do not need new pants. You can find used pants. A friend will give you pants. It's incredible how many pairs of pants there are in the world. But it's interesting the reaction to that. People have a gut reaction when I say that. And well, but you sell pants, and what? But then why are you selling them to your customers? And honestly, I've gone on this whole journey of why I do this, because the world has too much stuff already. We're overproducing currently. You walk into a Value Village and it's so overrun with clothing that's hardly been worn. How can I possibly ethically put another pair of pants in the world? But the reason I do is because you may not need new pants. You're probably going to buy a pair of new pants this year. And I would rather you buy a locally made, sustainably made, good quality pair of pants that I will repair year after year after year if you need them to be. I will hem them for free. I will alter them for free. I will take care of these pants as much as I possibly can, versus buying something made in China, mass produced, somebody jumped out of a window or a building collapsed, like, and it's full of antimony. So yeah. I do clothing because I want to offer an option. I want to show you there's an option so you don't have to compromise if that's what you care about. But I have been downsizing on the amount of clothing I produce because I'm so conflicted. But underwear is a different case. I don't think people should buy used underwear. I think that there's a very
disgusting
hygienic argument for buying new underwear.
Okay, have you ever, I have to ask the question.
What, me bought used underwear?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have never bought used underwear, but—
Okay, good. I just thought I should ask because I know you're very open to possibilities.
This is a really judgmental thing for me to be saying right now to customers who may have come and said this to me. I have had a number of customers tell me that they discovered my underwear when they bought it used at a thrift store and they loved it. Mm-hmm. We make a lot of underwear, not just one style.
Right.
I don't think anybody's ever—
You can never get rid of your pocket panties.
I don't know what styles they were, but you know, okay. Underwear ends up at the thrift store because it's final sale. We're a very small business. Yeah. There is a hygienic argument for underwear being final sale. I don't trust a place that takes underwear returns. Either they're reselling it or they're throwing it out. Those are your two options.
Yeah.
So which one are they doing? Underwear is final sale. I pride myself on having exceptional customer service, but this is one thing where I'm really strict. So people buy underwear as Christmas gifts for people and they buy the wrong size. That happens.
Okay, I get that.
I suggest re-gifting it to someone else because you know you've never worn it, but I don't know that and I can't promise that to my customers that you've never worn it. So I can't accept it back, but you can give it to someone else. I would suggest donating it to the women's shelter, actually. I donate any underwear that has flaws or doesn't sell for any reason to the women's shelter, and I love it. And they're so happy to receive underwear. They need it. And they accept used underwear because they have no choice. They need underwear that badly. So I'm thrilled at that. But
I actually just gave them some bras recently.
Oh,
I was cleaning
great.
Out, especially after learning about all the carcinogens and those kind of things.
Yeah.
I emptied out all of my cosmetics that I've had since I was a teenager.
Wow.
My bras and panties, but I can't deal with anymore. And then just in general, like clothes, you know?
Yeah.
And they love it. The local women's shelter. Oh,
yeah.
My gosh. They'll take everything and anything.
Everything.
And it's amazing. Oh, and then when you go traveling, the little small shampoo bottles that are like really horrible and, you know, obviously horrible for the environment. I noticed that a lot of hotels, even if you don't use them, they still give you new ones.
Oh, God.
And then I don't know what they do with them if I leave the hotel room and I just don't use them. I'm thinking that they might even throw that stuff away because you might sniff it or something. So I always keep them. And then I'll keep them in a Ziploc bag in my washroom until the Ziploc bag gets full.
Yeah.
And then I take it to the women's shelter and I give it to them. And they love it.
I love
because
it.
Those single-use things, it's so important for, you know, women's shelters because sometimes they just come for a shower.
Yeah. So that is probably my strictest customer service
Our
rule.
Our tangents.
No,
I'm
this
sorry.
Is really important.
Sorry
people should know about
listen.
This.
Yeah.
And the underwear is not the most expensive purchase you're ever going to make in your life. And if you're privileged enough to be gifted a pair of local underwear or any underwear and it doesn't work for you, that's just, even if it was a store that was willing to accept a return, I would take it to the women's shelter because chances are that store is going to throw that underwear away and nobody will ever have a chance to use it. I would highly recommend that you sacrifice the few dollars it costs to not return it to donate it to the women's shelter instead. That being said, I do make underwear and I feel very good about it. Your vagina is your thinnest mucous membrane. It sucks everything into your body. And conventional fabrics are full of carcinogens, such as antimony, as we've discussed. And you don't want to be wearing that against your skin.
Yeah.
So you want to wear as natural as possible. And that's what we sell, as natural as possible. and we love it. But you are obsessed with the pocket panties.
I love the pocket panties. Please don't put your cell phones in the pocket panties.
Please don't. Please don't.
Do not put your cell phone in the pocket panties.
Gross.
Like, huge public service announcement.
Yeah.
Don't do it. That's not what they're for. But like, how many times have you been wearing a pair of tights or just like, women don't have enough pockets. So
well,
just
let me tell you why we made them.
It's amazing.
And let me tell you why we made them and how close they were to not ever being sold. So there's a stereotype in women's fashion that we don't have pockets in our clothing, and it's considered to be quite sexist. And
it's so sexist, I hate it.
The truth is, it's keeping the price down, and that's what people aren't saying. That's why it is. If they put pockets in your dress is going to go up by $10 retail, and then they can't undercut H&M. That's the truth. They're going to tell you it's for the aesthetics, it's for this, it's for that. Women don't need pockets, on and on. The truth is, it's money. If it didn't cost a lot of money, things would have pockets in it. But women's clothing does not have pockets. So I decided that I was going to put pockets on everything where it wouldn't compromise the construction of the garment. And there are just some things where it just doesn't work, like a stretchy t-shirt, it will bag out or bulge. But I wanted to get really creative. And so I came up with pocket underwear. And I was making this underwear with pockets in the front. And I was thinking to myself as I'm making it, like, I'm just a goof. I don't take life very seriously, other than like, I want to leave the planet a better place than I found it. That's about as serious as I get. And the rest is, let's have fun. Don't take yourself so seriously. Just relax. And so I'm thinking, this underwear is so ridiculous. This is so ridiculous. Everyone's going to laugh. I'm trying to be a more serious company. I'm trying to make more professional clothing because that's what people want these days. That's what they're spending money on. I want to make you natural fiber, professional clothing that you can wear to work because there's a shortage of that. And I'm making this pocket underwear and this is ridiculous and everyone's going to laugh and on and on. I almost didn't put it in the store. And then I thought, well, let's just see what happens. And the response has been amazing.
Yeah.
So, first off, the sexist issue with pockets. It's great to have pocket underwear. It makes for a perfect Christmas gift. Nobody expects it. Everyone laughs. They're super comfy. They're actually really sexy. They're bamboo cotton. They're great. But also, I've had people tell me they've been life-changing.
Yeah.
So I wasn't there, but one of my staff told me that we have a customer who buys their pocket underwear who has diabetes. And she's been keeping an apparatus, some device that she uses in her pocket, in her underwear. And she says that they've been life-changing. She can wear whatever she wants now. Our store is on Granville Island. We've got a lot of tourists. They buy them a lot for traveling to keep their credit cards or their passport safe because it fully fits a passport.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, it'll fit a passport, absolutely. It'll peek out the corner, but like, they're a mid-rise. There's plenty of space. They're stretchy. Yep. Unfortunately, it fits a cell phone, but like you said, please don't put your cell phone in your pocket.
Your cell phone
just don't
that close to your vagina or your breast.
Just don't.
Or
yep.
just don't. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, backpack.
Even if it's actually not a health hazard, it's just not worth the risk.
It is a health hazard. There's been so many news reports.
I agree. I totally agree. But for the people who don't believe it's a health hazard, that's one thing you just don't need to test. Like, just don't test it. Just don't. But yeah, we've had put money in there. If you're going to the bar, you want to put your ID, you don't want to lose it. You're wearing a dress without pockets.
Yeah.
And for me, just walking around the house, put my hands in my pockets.
Yeah, that's also a really, really good point. Yeah, who doesn't hang around in their house in their underwear? It's like the best feeling in the world. I guess we're releasing too much information.
I'm in two different seasons here. June to September, I'm warm enough, but the rest of the year, I'm like wearing a fur coat. I'm so cold. So,
my house is quite nice.
I got a fireplace.
I have pockets in my sweatpants and stuff too.
Mm.
You have to have pockets. If you don't, you need a pocket. Anyways, so yeah, okay. Well, if you want some pocket panties,
perfect Christmas gift.
Yes, Christmas gift. Any time of the year, just in general, buy some good panties and bras for yourself. You also do bras, obviously.
Bralettes, no underwire. Though we are getting into underwire a little bit, but just try not to wear underwire. I'm very opinionated on that. Less underwire, the better.
Well, I showed you my bra that time.
Yeah, yours is great.
Stephanie and I know each other really well, so.
I make underwear for people. I see everything.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Mine has that little slit, like right at the breastbone over here, just so your boobs can breathe, and it's so so amazing to be able to let them breathe, because who wants booth sweat? It's the worst.
And there's so little you can actually, like, if you're going to wear a bra, whether it's good or bad or natural or synthetic, you're always going to have boob sweat. It's hard. That's great. That was a really cool bra.
Some air coming through, and it's all cotton. I love it. So anyways, customers who do want to reach out to you and buy your products, how do they do that?
So the best thing to do is walk into my store, which I really prefer. I think everybody should start by buying things locally before they order anything online from anywhere.
Please.
And my store is on Granville Island in Vancouver. So when you're visiting Vancouver, it's absolutely a destination you must see. Granville Island is the best place in the world. I've wanted a store on Granville Island since I was in preschool. It is an idyllic community full of local artisans. If you can't find what you need, if you can't find ethical, local, natural underwear or underwire-free bralettes or linen pants, and you really need to order them from me, we have www.devilmaywear.ca. And I have to warn you, we're going through a new POS system, so my inventory on that is not up to date, and there is currently no promo code for Shop With M, but you can email me at devilmaywear@gmail.com. It's super easy. Let me know exactly what you're looking for, and we'll give you a 10% discount for Shop With M.
And any shops that are on the app that are doing local retail and sell, you know, clothes and stuff, I highly encourage you to reach out to Stephanie. And if you want to carry the pocket underwear, I highly suggest you do. And let's, like, share Devil May Wear with the world, because I love, love, love her brand. And if you've been listening to this interview, you're obviously going to love, love, love her, because she's Stephanie. She's just so endearing. I love you.
I love
There's
you.
A reason we're such good friends, because
we hit it off right away.
We did. We were like obsessed with each other.
I'd love to do an interview sometime about how we met, just because that was also fun too.
God, how did
it'd be brief. With that show, that TV show.
The TV
you were
show
on.
I was working on. Yeah.
I would love to tell my side of the story sometime. That was hilarious.
What's your side of it? Just tell it now. Okay. Now I'm curious.
So you contacted me early or it was like mid spring, and we're like, I'm doing this show. It's a reality TV show. They want to produce their own garments. They're going to showcase them at Vancouver Fashion Week. What do you think? And I wrote back and said, there's not enough time to do this. It's not going to happen. And you were like, okay, great. We'll contact you when you're ready. And then you contacted me sometime in like late summer. The fashion show is supposed to happen in September. And you're like, hey, so we're ready now. And I was like, I told you back in spring, there wasn't enough time. And now we've got a month. This is not going to happen. And you were like, okay, that's fine. And then you contacted me again. And we're like, so do you want to come on the show and just like tell them on camera that it's impossible?
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. So that was really, really fun.
It was so fun because you were schooling them the whole time on camera. We loved you so much. As a producer for a TV show, it was just gold. I loved it.
Ridiculous. And then hearing your side of the story, and I haven't seen the TV show yet, and I can't wait to see it. But actually how it worked out, it just sounds so beautiful, and I don't want to put any spoiler
they
alert.
Totally made it happen, because these girls, like, even people
incredible.
Who work in TV, if you tell us something can't happen, we're like, I'll do it tomorrow.
I know, I work in TV now too.
Yeah, we make
part
things
time,
happen.
But that's why I do it, because I make things happen. But this was one where I was like, they came to show us, the whole point was we were going to have a meeting. They were going to showcase their designs. We were going to break them down and have a conversation about making them. They didn't even have any sketches. They didn't know what they were making. And the fashion show was like 4 weeks away. It was insane.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so happy.
They sewed it themselves. It was hilarious.
I haven't seen it. And I imagine it was edited quite well. But as far as I'm concerned, the actual story is reality TV at its best.
Yeah, it was so entertaining. We didn't get to film all of the behind the scenes because they were like, these girls, they were, you know, pretty big, like whatever, stars in their own right.
What's the show
called? Whatever it is that they do. I can't tell you.
No, it's out there. It's on billboards.
I know, but I signed an NDA and we've talked about the behind the scenes.
That's why I'm not saying anything either, because I don't know what you can and can't say.
It's a big
TV show. I haven't seen it. I haven't asked you, am I on? Did I get into it?
Of course you got into
it.
You
did? Oh my God, I gotta see it.
You're on TV. Okay. Yeah, but you're already famous, so it doesn't really matter. But yeah, no, the episode went really, really well, and it looks phenomenal. But it was a nightmare to have to produce, but it was great. I mean,
you did
honestly,
a great job.
And, yeah. And now I'm doing this instead. So
it really, but it really endeared me to you. Like, one thing that's really important to me about people I let into my life is their level of positivity. And at first I thought you were pie in the sky and being like, you know, in TV, there's like, it's impossible, but we're going to make it happen with magic. And there is the, it's impossible. It's actually completely impossible. And usually directors can't seem to tell the difference between the two. And I thought you were like, just crazy. And I was like, oh, this is ludicrous. But you always had this great attitude and I really liked talking to you. So, and just the whole thing seemed so silly and fun. And so I of course I'll engage. But then it turns out that you have that magic to get things done. And you did get it done. And you do have this positivity where you have a really good understanding of how hard and painful the world actually can be, but you're not gonna let it get you down, and you always see the positive side. Even when I don't wanna see the positive side, even when I'm grumpy because I'm tired, you're always incredibly positive. Yay. It's true.
I love you so much.
I love you too.
You know, it's like a ditto situation, right? Aww. Like, you say you're not positive, but
I get
like,
grumpy sometimes.
You're just real is all it is, sweetie. Like, honestly.
I'm real.
And I didn't say sweetie like in like a, you know, misogynistic, like whatever way that people say it. But like, you really are a sweetheart. You have like the kindest heart ever. We love each other, whoever is watching this. We clearly love each other so much. But like, Stephanie brings that reality to the situation because she comes with so much experience. And you... You need that in a team.
I'm just really obsessed is my thing. I'm obsessed and I have a real problem with compromise, and I'm faced with compromise myself constantly. And one of the reasons that I choose to run a company, although it's challenging and it takes so many hours and there's no guarantees, and I'm making clothing in one of the most expensive places in the world I could possibly make clothing. There's no way I could compete with foreign labor. I do it because I know that my expectations for making a better product in a better world are so unbelievably high that I don't think I could trust anybody else to hold such high standards. And there are companies who are doing a really, really good job of it, but I just can't compromise myself.
That's beautiful. And the shift is happening in the universe right now.
It's happening.
People are looking for sustainable options.
Yep.
And that word is a little bit complicated and people are figuring out what it means for them. Thanks to people like you. They now have options. So thank you.
So can I just do a couple more shout outs? I'm just thinking about this as I'm sitting here because I'm not a good self-promoter.
Sure.
The course I'm teaching at SFU has had a name change recently. So if anybody...
Fraser University, by the way.
Simon Fraser University.
SFU is, if you're like sitting in wherever, Australia, Simon Fraser University in Canada.
And I'm teaching the course with Emily Smith, who's incredible. And she has a great website called Random Acts of Making, which is really cool. If you look that up, Random Acts of Making. Our course is called Make Change Labs. It had a different name, but we ran into copyright infringement, which was weird. The course name has been around forever, but anyway, so it's Make Change Labs. And it's a business course that focuses on fashion sustainability. We're also working on the Fiber Shed in Vancouver. So if you look up Vancouver Fiber Shed, there's not a lot out, but we're looking to bring more people on board. So if you want to join and help out, Vancouver Fiber Shed. And if you look up Devil May Wear Vancouver anywhere online, I get these like really enthusiastic pushes for Instagram, and then I fall off the map and stop trying, and then I get enthusiastic again. So I've recently been like reinvigorated on Instagram. It's my favorite social media platform if I'm ever going to do one. So at Devil May Wear, it's really straightforward. And contact me anytime about anything at all.
Pocket underwear is my biggest one. Pocket, let's spread the glory that is pocket underwear.
Feminist pocket underwear.
Feminist, natural. and like healthy, good for you. Yeah. And yeah, tell your local clothing stores and stuff that you want to carry Devil May Wear too. So I think.
Thank you.
I would love that to have Devil May Wear everywhere around the world. Aww. Okay. Well, thank you so much for taking part in this. I hurt you long time.
I hurt you too.
And hopefully see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. The Sustainable Life app is a digital platform which includes a mobile app, website, podcast, and documentary series, all centered around the five factors for sustainable consumption: impact on human health, environmental impact, respect for human rights, respect for animal rights, and last but not least, socioeconomic advantage, because we want brands and businesses who have sustainable practices to succeed. The purpose of the free Sustainable Life app, available on both Apple and Android, is to connect you with sustainable brands and businesses worldwide. Use the app to do direct-to-consumer online shopping or for the fun hashtag shop local function, through which you can find local retail shops, grocery stores, cafes, restaurants, salons, spas, event venues, eco hotels, eco tours, and even eco service providers like makeup artists, naturopaths, and dog groomers. This app was created to make sustainable living easy for you. Use it at home and while you travel to live a life in line with your core values. And of course, to hashtag shop local. The app is available on both Apple and Android devices. Have a story idea or suggestions for a future guest for our podcast? Visit www.sustainablelifeapp.com to submit an idea, or email us at podcast@sustainablelifeapp.com with your guest or show idea suggestions. Just a note that we are a non-judgmental community. It is our belief that no one is perfect, but if we all do our part to consume more sustainably, there will naturally be a positive ripple effect worldwide. Our hope is that the app helps to positively impact your health, the environment, and all living beings. On a legal note, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are that of the guest and do not necessarily reflect that of Mangla Bansal, Tell Your Story Productions, Inc., and its subsidiaries, affiliates, and associated companies, together with all respective officers, directors, and employees thereof. Thank you for being such an important part of our community. The love enlighten me salutes the love enlighten you. See you next time.